Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is Saturday morning, September the 17th, 2011, and I am down in Encinitas right now offering my workshop down there, the last one for the year. And we're doing the Intrinsic Getting Ready for our big Mount Madonna retreat coming up in November. And we're full, and I'm very, very thrilled about that. We're going to be doing some marvelous work. This is kind of a prelude to next year, this intrinsic goodness thing we're working on, because we're going to be working on karma probably for a long, long time, different forms of karma and how it works. So I'm down in Encinitas right now, and through the magic of my computer and the radio station here, KRXA, we are able to offer to you the program. So I'm very, very grateful. I really am. I miss home. I just love it. I have some very powerful questions today. Things that people have written to me over the weeks. And if you would like to offer a question, I'd be honored to hear from you. If you go to the website at aspire.org and go to the main page, you will see up at the upper right, contact. And if you click on that, you can email me from there, and any questions, fair game. And if you don't want me to use your name, always let me know, and I promise I won't. This comes from Sue in San Diego. What about those of us who do not want to be caught up in the cult of Zen and just don't want a teacher to tell us how we should meditate? Can we meditate? Sue, I think anyone can meditate, but when you don't have a teacher, when you're not sitting formally with a teacher, you can't have the wonderful aggravation of having someone tell you you're doing it wrong or that you're fooling yourself. Now, that's a very, very important thing. I am a teacher, and I try to be very, very conscious of my students and what they're going through. It's the same stuff I have gone through and continue to go through. There's a great deal of beauty in having a teacher, but you've got to be a beautiful person, Sue, to have it. And you have to be able to see the bigger picture. You call it the cult of Zen. That's probably what made me look at this email. Where do you get the idea that it's a cult? I don't understand that. I looked up the word cult in the dictionary, a system of religious veneration and devotion directed towards a particular figure or object. Relatively a small group of people having religious beliefs and practices regarded by others as strange or sinister, like Satan worship. Well, that doesn't apply to Zen, none of that. But, you know, if you really look at it, the first part of that dictionary definition is kind of interesting. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed towards a particular figure or object. Well, that could be Jesus, couldn't it? Or the Pope, couldn't it? Hey? You start to look at it, and you start to see, there's, you know, that's a cult. No uncertain terms, it's a cult, in my opinion, but that's just me. But you start to look at that and you start to realize, my God, we're all in a cult. You're in a cult if you're in this country and you worship the flag, or you worship, I don't know, who do you worship? Whoever. Obama? I don't know. But no matter what, I don't think you could call Zen a cult, because you're not there worshiping the Buddha or the master or the teacher, not at all. They're there as guidelines. They're there to help you along the path. They're not there to tell you how bad you are, how wrong you are, and all of that other stuff. A teacher is a very interesting thing in Zen to me, like no other experience I've ever had. They're there to bring you along. And that's what we do. We just bring you along. Now, by bringing you along, this is what I mean. We bring you to your awareness over and over and over again. And we do it in as many different ways as we possibly can, always bringing you to the place where awareness comes first. Now, if I do that, if I come to the place where awareness comes first, where I can look at my life, excuse me, and see it for what it is, without commentary, without there being a rash of judgment and fear and hate involved in it, then I have someone who is helping me. But I couldn't call Zen a cult. And it may seem rather weird to meditate and sit and chant, but it's been going on for thousands of years. And a great beauty has arisen out of that. A great joy. You say, what about those of us who do not want to be caught up in the cult of Zen and just don't want a teacher? Then you don't want a teacher. You won't go very far because there'll be no one showing you the pitfalls. There'll be no one showing you how this gets to that and that gets to this. There'll be no one there criticizing you, as you would probably think of it as being. But that isn't really what it's all about. But that's probably what I hear from you. So you don't want to be criticized. You don't want to be shown your stuff. You just want to do it on your own and think you've got it. And you probably are going to have to look at that one day or another. I don't know. But we all have our stuff. If you don't have a teacher, you don't have anyone there to help you. And if you don't have anyone there to help you, then you think you're doing it right when possibly you could be doing it wrong. Let me give you an old Zen story about this. I've always loved this story. It's about the master. He's sitting there in his hut, and one of his students comes rushing in, and he says, "I have overcome my mind. I have found oneness in the universe. I have watched myself and I have achieved the supreme oneness of life. I am no longer angry. I'm no longer fearful." So the master looks at him kind of in a nonplussed way and takes his stick and whacks him right over the head. And the student is just humiliated, mortified by it. And he gets very angry. He said, "What the heck did you do that for?" And the master looked at him and said, "Where's your anger now?" That's the value of having a Zen master or a Zen teacher. Those of us who know when to whack you and when not to whack you. Now, I've never hit a student, boy, but I've wanted to. Oh, sorry. I don't have enough compassion in me to do the hitting. But I hit in another kind of way. And my students will tell you that. It's all about coming to a place where you can see at the point of your life what living is all about. It's not about just getting away with the things you want to get away with and having your life be the way you want it to be. There's so much more to this beautiful thing called our life. And if I'm not careful, I'll just do things my way. And if I do things my way, I will have no way of looking at the bigger picture of my living. I will never know what it's really all about. Sue, listen to me. There's no cult here. You're wrong if you think there's a cult. There isn't. A cult is a church where you go and you worship a person who lived 2,000 years ago. Or you have as your adoration a minister or whatever, a pope. You don't even know them. And you give yourself to them. This is not the way. In Zen, it is all about the playfulness, the joy, and the honesty you can have with yourself in a way that brings forth awakening. And that's really all it is, simple awakening. Yes, you can meditate alone, but will you? I don't think so. I really don't. You would have to have such inner resolve that it would be absolutely heroic. Most people left to themselves just live in the habit of their life, and that's as far as it goes. Habit, habit, habit. Ooh, I'm a hobbit. So I hope you give this some consideration, and when the time is right, the teacher really will appear. Trust me on that. It happens to all of us. It happened to me. It's happened to my students. It happens to all of us. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's a great question, you know. The cult thing was a little strange, though. Cult. Jeez. Americans always need somebody to follow, don't they? Gotta follow him. Gotta follow her. I don't know. Follow your heart. Let love live you. That's my deal. The next one comes from John, and John lives in Encinitas, and down here where I am right now. Why is God a man in the Bible? Can he or she be a woman? John. You know, John, normally I ignore these questions because they're so, well, silly. You know what I mean? They don't have anything to do with the meaning of what we're doing here on this program. But I started to think about your question a lot in the sense of where you're coming from. When I was a kid and I was going to Unity Sunday School, they always talked about God as the man. And I remember asking my Sunday school teacher the very same question you asked. Why is he a man? And, of course, the only answer they could give is that he's a man because that's the way Jesus spoke of him as our Father. But then when I went into seminary, I went and found out, obviously, that there's more to this than meets the eye. That the Father figure that Jesus used is supposed to be a loving figure. That doesn't translate well in our Western culture. In fact, Jesus doesn't translate well totally into the culture we have now because of the many differences that have occurred from then till now and all sorts of things. But I have never thought of God as a man myself personally or a woman. And I don't get it. I think it's probably, John, something that people get involved in because they like it. They get involved in it because makes them feel good that there is a father figure looking above them, and then they know that someone's taking care of them. And they like that feeling of, you know, someone looking over their shoulder and helping them. And I think that's basically all it's about. It's not really about love. It's about me taking love and reducing it down to the human form. And when I do that, I remove myself from its authentic form, and then I have real difficulty in understanding the nature of it all. God is not a man. I don't even like using the word God anymore because of the way it's been used in the culture that we live in. You know, you can use it in conjunction with swearing. You can use it in conjunction with some euphoric moment in your life. It can be used in so many different ways, and What is the one way it needs to be used? And it just gets so ridiculous, I can't go there. But this is where I do go with it all. God is love. Just what the Master said. God is love. And maybe that would be the best way to think about it. John, don't think in terms of sexes, male and female. Think in terms of God is love, and letting love live you. Now you have something very profound. Now you're thinking outside the box. And if God is not a man who is up in the sky somewhere doing things that, you know, people want him to do to make their lives easier, then we have something very unique going on. We have something maybe of a principle, of a love, of a compassion that exceeds our earthly value system. And we start to see that maybe this whole thing is not what we believed it to be. Life is never what I believe it to be. Life is about a certain love, a certain goodness, a certain presence of goodness. And when I find that presence in myself, I have met God. I have realized I have strayed away from the whole thing so many times in the course of my lifetime. And why? Oh, for the fantasy of arrogance and ego and narcissism and all sorts of little endeavors that keep me amused while I'm in my physical body. And I forget who and what I really am. That's very sad, but that's what we do. It's all about love. So, John, if you can drop the idea of God and man and start looking at it as just love, neither male nor female, neither good nor bad, nor right nor wrong, it's just love, then I think you have something very beautiful. You'll be on the right track. And if you close your eyes and you start penetrating into that love, you'll find it lives within you. It lives in everything in this life. And that's the beauty of it all. You are love. You are nothing but love. Not the human love that we're akin to, that we write country western music to. Jeez, can't stand that stuff. But the love that really is a love song. It comes from compassion, forgiveness. It comes from a tenderness deep inside of all of us. And if you can be devoted to it, something unique happens. That devotion turns into compassion, forgiveness. It changes everything in our life. It makes life worth living. Think about it for a little bit, John. You might want to get this series, A Life Worth Living. I did it on Socrates' great teachings, that the life lived unexamined is not a life worth living. A lot of people can't examine their life. They don't want to see what they're doing. They just want to get away with it all. But if you're not that type of person, you might want to get that series. It will help you immensely in your question, and I think you'll find it deeply meaningful. Please forgive me, won't you, John? Namaste. Great question. Very good question. Yeah, who'd have thought? God's a man, a dude. I have a lot of jokes on that one I won't go into. Stan from, again, San Diego. My last question. Where do I go when I turn within, so to speak? It's interesting to me. I don't know what you mean by turn within, Stan, but if you close your eyes and you move your attention into your heart, if you can close your eyes and drop your thinking, you go to a certain place called consciousness. And you can achieve consciousness through breath work, meditation, through focus. And in that concentration and in that focus, you find that life takes on a new meaning. It isn't the meaning of him doing this and her doing that and this is what he said, this is what she said, none of that. It doesn't work like that at all. It's about a certain state of love inside you. A certain place that you can go to. It's very simple. But here's the deal. And I loved your question because nobody asked me that. What does it mean to go within? It means to be simple. Unassuming, aware, without the need for there to be right and wrong, good and bad, just for there to be awareness. Awareness of the goodness of your heart and your life. And to stay in that awareness beyond pride, vanity, and fear at all costs to your heart and your soul. Now you have something tremendously unique. And if you can do that, which you can, you're going to find a significant life, a life worth living. And it's very powerful, this life worth living. If you can achieve it with a sense of joy and playfulness, you'll find meaning in your life. And within will look not like, thinking inside your mind. That isn't within, that's really the without. It'll be more like the environment of your heart. You will feel the nature of your heart. And just the nature of your heart can change everything in your life, believe it or not. Just recognizing that the intrinsic goodness of your life lives within you as love. It doesn't have anything to do with theology or politics, with religion or philosophy. It has to do with a certain moment you enter into. A moment where authentic love pulsates through you, giving you everything you knew, ever needed in this life and more. And realizing how merciful life is with us. And then feeling a sense of profound gratitude, humility. The more humble you are, Stan, the more you will find going within meaning more to you and more to you. You will find it bringing you closer and closer to the meaning and the substance of life. And then you will have something very profound, something deeply significant. You will have something that is called love. Love is very unique. It is about coming to the nature of your being. Is about recognizing the nature of your being and never allowing that to change anything in your life other than to bring you to kindness. In other words, you're not looking to change your world. You're working to let your world change to the love that lives within you. That's really what it's all about. Love lives within me. My whole world, as I look at it, is a reflection of that kind of love. And if I don't like my world the way it is, it's only because of the love that I've invented, the love that I have supposed upon myself. So take a look at it. Just be playful. Where do you go when you turn within, when you close your eyes? You go to that secret place, if you're wise, that is beyond thought and reasoning. And you go there to find the meaning of your life. It's very, very important. Please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, something I might be able to share with you, I would love to hear from you. Please come to my website at aspire.org. aspire.org, and when you get there, you can go to contact and email me any question you like. Anything that means something to you, I would be more than happy to hear from you. And if it's something you don't want your name used or whatever, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Just tell me you don't want your name used, and I won't. I have to remind you that these programs are supported solely and entirely upon your tax-deductible gifts. Aspire is a not-for-profit, and that means that you can obviously take deductions from your donations, but I need your donations to pay for airtime. We're pretty slim now in this economy, you can imagine, and your donations loom very, very important. I hope you will consider being a sponsor of Aspire. It's a very important thing. You can be one for as low as $50 a quarter. That's four times a year. That's only $200 a year. But boy, does that help us. And the money that we get from that, the donations, are not only tax deductible to you, but they are used to purchase more airtime here on KRXA and to help us convert our Aspire programs into YouTube. And then to make new Aspire programs, which we're going to be working on next year, to be of service to humankind. So if you go to the website at aspire.org and you go to the main page, you will see Support Aspire. If you pull down that little table of contents there, you will see, you'll see everything you needed to know but was afraid to ask maybe about Aspire. There is some very interesting sponsorship, how to make a donation, how you can make one right online, our testimonials, and in appreciation. You will see Aspire has touched and continues to touch many people who need, whatever it is that this program offers. And it does help a lot of people. Your tax-deductible gifts will be used to serve humankind. So give it a thought, won't you? I hope you will. It would be very, very important to keep the program on the air. I have a wonderful retreat coming up here, Mount Madonna, in November. And if you get a chance while you're on the website, go take a look at events, and you will see Retreats Mount Madonna. Just click on Retreats, and it'll take you to our Mount Madonna page. We are very, very excited about this. We're going to be working on intrinsic goodness, getting ready for January when we start working upon karma. I know a lot of people think they know a lot about karma, but I am going to change, some of your attitudes about it for the good, I hope, and to help you understand the mystery, the beauty of karma, and how it works to love you, care for you, and how it works to take care of you in a certain kind of way that only karma can. But I'm going to show you how that works and the way it works, and it will be a very powerful year. I think one of the most powerful years we've ever had. And we'll go on and on and on with this to nauseam for those of you who are with us here on a regular basis, and I'll tell you more about it. Anyway, go take a look at Mount Madonna Retreats. It'll help you understand where we're going and what we're all about. We're not a cult. Jeez, you never know, huh? I will be back on the air tomorrow morning at 9:04 as I wing my way home tomorrow from Encinitas. So I hope you'll join me. Have a wonderful, wonderful Saturday, and please forgive me. Namaste.